from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point, a big suit brought yesterday by the Attorney General of New York against Barclays, the British banking giant, over the stock trading dark pool it operates in the U.S. Plenty of American Wall Street players with dark pools, too. A whole lot of stock now traded there, off the public exchanges, with very little transparency. New York's AG charges favoritism, advantage, secrecy, lying. This hour on Point, Wall Street's dark pools and fundamental fairness, openness in the U.S. stock market. You can join us on air or online with this conversation is always on. Do you know the system, dark pools? What's going on in there? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Press conference yesterday, New York Attorney General Eric Schneiderman saying the activity taking place in Barclays' dark pools is hurting investor confidence.
Investors have to have confidence that when they put their hard-earned money into a market, they will have a safe, transparent environment in which to trade, that there will be one set of rules for everyone, and that they will not be lied to or deceived. And as our complaint alleges, that is not what happened here.
One set of rules for everyone, safe, transparent environment not going on, he says here, and the eye looks wider. Joining me first today from Washington is Scott Patterson, financial regulation reporter for The Wall Street Journal, author of The Quants, How a New Breed of Math Whizzes Conquered Wall Street and Nearly Destroyed It, and of Dark Pools, The Rise of Machine Traders and the Rigging of the U.S. Stock Market. Scott, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
What is being alleged in this big new suit by New York's Attorney General?
Right. So the New York Attorney General is alleging that Barclays, a big bank based in the U.K., mm-hmm. has been deceiving its clients as to the relationship that it has with very sophisticated, high-speed traders. The complaint lays out some very convincing evidence that Barclays, for a number of years, has been catering to these high-speed firms and giving them advantages like information about how the dark pool works that other clients don't get, while at the same time marketing the dark pool as a place that is safe from such predatory trading activities. So the complaint is, it's very stark. It's rather shocking. This is something that people on Wall Street have been wondering about for years, if this kind of thing was going on. It was sort of, rumors that such activities were taking place. But this complaint has some very convincing evidence that the bank has not been quite upfront with its clients. And those clients are, you and I. They're institutional investors trading on behalf of mutual funds. So they're telling those clients, this is a safe place to come. We protect you. We're very transparent. While the New York Attorney General, at least, is saying that that is not the case. It's not transparent.
New York's AG is saying dark waters, dark pool full of sharks.
The lawsuit filed today charges that Barclays grew its dark pool into one of the largest in the United States by telling investors they were diving into safe waters when, in fact, Barclays' dark pool was full of predators who were there at Barclays' invitation.
Scott Patterson with The Wall Street Journal. We'll look at dark pools. Barclays is by no means the only bank operating these. Describe for us this rise of off-exchange trading in the U.S. How has it become so big? Something like 40% of trading volume now, not in public exchanges. How did these begin? What goes on in there? What's the rationale behind dark pools?
Right. I would say that this really began in the early 2000s as computer trading became more prevalent. The big institutional firms were growing concerned that their orders were too transparent to the rest of the market and were basically bait for the predators. So they started sending more orders to these off-exchange dark pools. And at the time, in the early 2000s, there were just a few of them, in order to hide from the predatory activity. And that made some sense. And so for a number of years, the dark pools catered to the big institutional firms. They were really just big block trades. But as time went on, the banks, the big Wall Street banks, started to see a profit opportunity with these dark pools. So they started opening up their own dark pools. So Credit Suisse, a big Swiss bank, Goldman Sachs, mm-hmm. UBS, Morgan Stanley, you know, all the usual suspects started opening up their own dark pools in order to route the flow of their own customers to those pools. That is exactly what Barclays was doing. It's a cost-saving measure for one thing, because these big Wall Street firms are trading on behalf of clients, and for them to send orders to exchanges, they would have to pay a fee. If they routed it to their own dark pool, they wouldn't have to pay a fee. So it's a cost-saving measure to the tune of tens of millions of dollars for each bank, if not hundreds of millions. So there's a lot of money on the line.
So the banks make a lot of money. I'm thinking about everybody else. So when we hear the stock market report at the end of the day and they talk about volume, that volume no longer by any means represents the true volume of what's going on in terms of stock trading.
Yeah, if you're talking about the reports about how much traded on the New York Stock Exchange, that is just a fraction of how much trading is actually going on right now. A lot, as you said, 35 to 40% now is taking place away from these exchanges, and that's a big concern for regulators and law enforcement officials.
Now, why is that such a concern? I'm looking at Mary Jo White here, the SEC chairman, saying that dark pools and off-exchange trading venues, quoting her, risk seriously undermining the quality of the U.S. stock market. I mean, the subtitle of your book is The Rigging of the U.S. Stock Market. These are both pretty big charges. What's the problem?
Right. Well, the SEC Chairman Mary Jo White a few weeks ago gave a speech in New York in which she said that transparency is the hallmark of U.S. markets. Now, when you think of a dark pool, it
doesn't sound too transparent.
The opposite of that. And it's not just that the trading takes place away from the public eye. It's that the way that they operate, and this is something that the Barclays suit really reveals, is that they are not telling all their clients how they operate, who gets the best advantages, who's not getting those advantages. There's a lot of things that are going on underneath the hood at these places that nobody knows about. The exchanges have a much stricter regulatory regime that they operate under. They have to disclose to the regulators exactly what they're doing.
Scott, you've said that this all tips the playing field to the advantage of very sophisticated firms. How? And firms doing what? Are we talking here about flash trading, high-frequency trading?
Yeah, it's high-frequency trading. These are very sophisticated firms that statistics show make up at least half of all stock market volume right now. These firms rose up about 10 to 15 years ago, and they don't trade based on market fundamentals. They pay a lot of attention to the plumbing of the markets, of the exchanges, of the dark pools, and they work very close, hand in hand with the operators of the exchanges and the dark pools to design methods of trading that give them advantages.
Who gets to come in and trade in the dark pool, Scott? Who gets to, is it like a members club? Who gets to go and trade here where, you know, you can kind of work the angles out of the public eye so effectively?
The firms that have the most volume, that's really what it's all about, is if you can send a dark pool or an exchange a lot of orders, they're going to want your business, and they're going to do whatever it takes to get you to send those orders to them. And that's really what's happened over the last few years, is the exchanges and the dark pool operators have been fighting one another to get that flow. And the concern is that they've been handed these advantages that other people don't.
What does it mean for a small investor? Let's say you're in a 401k. You're very likely not investing that yourself. Maybe it's invested by some of these big traders. So are little fish essentially represented in the dark pools by big fish, or are they cut out?
Yeah, absolutely. That is what's taking place, is the grandma and grandpa, their 401k is being represented by a broker who's executing orders on behalf of their mutual fund company. So a broker like Barclays or Goldman Sachs or Morgan Stanley is actually doing that trading.
And so what's it matter? If I'm not in there myself, but I'm represented in there, if there are advantages in there, my trader presumably has them for me. You say it's rigged. Rigged against whom?
Yeah, well, the concern is that it's rigged against grandma and grandpa and on behalf of the high-frequency traders. That's what the New York Attorney General suit is laying out, and that's what the SEC is investigating, is that the brokers who are executing these orders on behalf of the big investment firm institutional investors, you know, like 401ks and pension funds, are getting taken advantage of. And they're in some ways in colluding or in bed with the high frequency firms in order to get that flow to come to their venues.
Technology made all this possible. Is it possible to turn it around, Scott, or is this just technology getting away from us, out in front of all the regulators?
But technology has absolutely gotten away from the regulators. I think they're catching up, and you know, this lawsuit shows that these things are being exposed. You know, I wrote a book a few years ago that exposed some of it. Michael Lewis just wrote Flash Boys.
Flash Boys, yeah.
Bringing a lot of attention to these issues. So I think it's, I think the light is being shown on these venues. And there's going to be some
action, maybe. Lights coming on. Dark Pools, The Rise of the Machine Traders and the Rigging of the U.S. Stock Market is Scott Patterson's book. He's a reporter for The Wall Street Journal. Scott, thanks for joining us. We'll be right back with more on Dark Pools. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Wall Street's dark pools and fairness in U.S. stock trading. A big suit this week charges favoritism, secrecy, lying. It goes to the integrity and fairness of the U.S. stock market. SEC Chairman Mary Jo White saying we risk seriously undermining the quality of the U.S. stock market. With us right now from New York, Joshua Brown, financial advisor at Ritholtz Wealth Management. It blogs about markets, economics, and finance at thereformedbroker.com. Author of Backstage Wall Street, Insider's Guide to Knowing Who to Trust, Who to Run From, and How to Maximize Your Investment. Plugged in and very funny guy, Josh Brown, thank you for joining us.
Hi, Tom.
And with us from Irvine, California, Shah Gilani, editor of the Capital Wave Forecast, the Short Side Fortunes newsletters, writes about finances and the markets on MoneyMorning.com, Wall Street Insights, Indictments.com, and his Forbes blog, What Moves Markets, former hedge fund operator, manager. Shah Gilani, thank you for being here.
Hi, Tom.
Shah, is this a problem? People in the biz know all about it. People outside may just be hearing about it as it, you know, sort of rises above the surface of the sea here with regulators talking about it and this New York AG suit. Do we have a problem here, Shah?
We have a serious problem. There are insiders in terms of folks who are understanding of the market, the systems, and how they operate. What's surprising to me is a lot of folks on Wall Street and the money managers we're talking about who seem to be at risk from these dark pools who actually trade within them aren't aware of this. And that surprises me to no end. But this is a very serious problem. I think just the Attorney General's suit was going to shed a lot of light on this, and I think there's a lot more to come.
Explain a little more about how they work. There's no third party here. These are pools where you go in and what, somehow a trade is arranged without a third party, and it's not publicized. You just move your stock, but it makes it really hard for people outside to gauge overall demand for any particular stock.
Well, the history of dark pools was a function that actually it's been probably in the making for a long time, and the result of the fragmentation of the markets is big traders want to be able to execute large blocks of trades anonymously. So dark pool operators came to the fore and said, listen, we'll set up this arrangement for you. You can come into our dark pool. You'll have total anonymity. No one will know on the other side of your trades who you are, what size you're going to execute, and we will match up folks like you who have similar interests in conducting large trades and being anonymous. The problem is that information, the players who want to go into these dark pools, who need to go into these dark pools to execute, actually send in these orders. What's happening within the dark pools is the dark pool operators are allowing high-frequency traders access to the same information that they receive.
Okay.
Worst of all, the dark pool operators are themselves high-frequency traders. So they are getting access to the information that the mutual fund managers, pension asset managers, weren't aware they were privy to, and they are trading against them. They are essentially front-running them using high-frequency trading techniques.
So somebody's getting the short end of the stick here. Is it little guys, or is it just, you know, one fancy trader versus another? They're all in a tough game. They know it, and there are advantages, and everybody's trying to find their own. But is it a problem for the ordinary investor?
Well, the AG's suit against Barclays shows first and foremost that they're concerned that it's a problem that the mutual fund managers and pension asset managers are facing. In other words, the institutional players are facing this problem themselves. They're not aware of what's going on in these dark pools. Now, that affects the public because they represent the public in terms of their execution of orders that benefit pension assets and retirement accounts, etc. So the public is being affected. But the AG suit really points to the fact that these institutional investors themselves are being disadvantaged and they had no idea. That's where the quote-unquote fraud and deceit comes from.
Josh Brown, you're writing all day about this. I love your Twitter feed at Downtown Josh Brown. You're on top of all this stuff, and you're not worried about it. Why not, Josh?
I can't believe there are some parties who have advantages over others in the stock market. I am totally amazed. I mean, what we're talking about is the essence of capitalism. There's always going to be an asymmetry. There are always going to be people in power and people not in power, and there are always going to be disadvantages on one side of any given trade. Now, if there's fraud involved in tricking people, that takes it to another level, and that's a different story. But this idea that a market is ever going to be completely fair, I think is very, very childish. In fact, the origin of the stock market. A lot of people don't know this. There used to be two types of people. There were auctioneers and there were merchants. And the auctioneers presided over stock trading and they had huge advantages and the merchants got sick of it. In 1792, they met at a hotel. They plotted to get rid of the auctioneers. They signed a document where they basically said, hey, it's just the 24 of us. From now on, we set the rules, and anyone that wants to trade with us trades by our rules. They had this insurrection, and they became the core of the modern-day New York Stock Exchange. Essentially, the market was born as a rigged institution for the benefit of those original 24 players.
Okay,
so
okay, but here's
we should
the
not be shocked
yeah,
but
here's
that
the
this
question.
Is going on.
Yeah, we opened the show saying, you know, how can we be shocked that who thinks it's pure as the driven snow in any stock market?
Right.
On the other
You're
hand,
right.
Josh, isn't there a matter of degree? Has technology and the capacity for these dark pools, for the fragmentation, things aren't happening in one big pool at all anymore. Is there a matter of degree when advantage becomes so prevalent that Mary Jo White is saying she's worried about undermining the very essential quality of the U.S. stock market? What about it?
I worry about that too. But the thing is, in every market era, there is a version of this. Right now, it happens to be high-frequency trading. But there's always been something. And I think the biggest issue is that this kind of thing popping up in the headlines every 6 weeks when there's a lawsuit or every 6 months when there's somebody gets charged with something, it's put people off from investing for their retirement.
Well, maybe it should because they're at the back of the line. They're the little fish. They're the ones who get squashed.
They are not competing with high frequency. If you are – here's the deal. We have never had a better opportunity for individual investors to get a fair deal in the market. Never. Never before in history.
What's counteracting the dark secrecy and advantage? What's the opposite effect that makes it good for small guys?
All electronic trading is not HFT. Mm-hmm. All HFT is not front running and quote stuffing.
High frequency trading, yeah.
High frequency. There needs to be some nuance. Right now, if you're an individual investor, you can get exposure to the market for essentially $0. That's never existed before. Right now, if you're an individual investor,
low cost trades online and all that.
Here's a portfolio rebalanced annually. We're going to charge you 10 basis points. That's basically free.
Yep.
You've never had it. In addition, if you want to trade stocks now, you can basically do so at $0 in commissions. Another thing we've never had. A lot of that is happening right now because of the benefits of electronic trading. And to ignore that half of – look, I'm not an apologist for HFT firms that are robbing people, but let's be frank. electronic trading in and of itself is not nefarious, and dark pools, if operated fairly and without fraud, are not necessarily an evil thing.
Josh, stand by. Shah Gilani, then, 2 points here. Josh makes one, but here's a listener who makes it on Twitter as well. Edward writes, "It's funny to listen to people act as if it's a big secret that the markets are rigged." Josh says, "It's always been rigged. That's part of the deal." But on the other side, he says, Shah, it's never been better for the little guy. You can trade at very low cost. There's more information out there for anybody than there ever has been before. What about the countervailing forces here? Do they even things out toward it's okay?
No, they don't. I think on the surface, that's the way folks look at it. Well, golly, if these high-frequency traders are in the middle of my trades and it costs me a penny, what difference does it make if I'm a long-term investor? And that's what a lot of folks want us to believe in terms of the transparency. It's not a big deal in the long run if you're a long-term investor. What's a penny per share over time?
I think that's reasonable.
It is reasonable, but that doesn't scratch the surface even of what's going underneath. The reason that trades are practically free for the public in terms of the cost of execution is because someone is paying. So there's a cost of execution. If the public isn't paying for it, they're paying the discounted brokerage rates, someone else is picking up the cost of that execution.
Yeah.
That is being picked up by high-frequency traders who are paying for the information, for the order flow that everyone from Fidelity and E-Trade and Ameritrade and so on, all of the discount brokers are sending their order flow to venues that allow high-frequency traders to get in between and read those orders, construct prior to the understanding of what the regular market, the whole market
sees. So their snout is under the tent. It's out front. They have the advantage of being in front of everybody else.
Hold on. Shah, let me ask you a serious question. If a friend of yours told you, hey, I've been researching Apple. I really think it's going to have a good run for the next decade. And they buy the stock at $625.07. And you look at your level two monitor and you say, oh, man, at the same time, you almost were able to buy it at $627.06. You really got robbed there. Is that like the kind of thing that should keep people out of the market, or is that really something that the institution should be more worried about?
Shah Gilani, how about is that all it is, and should that put people off?
With all due respect, Josh, that's a convenient argument. I think if you tallied up the hundreds of millions, if not tens of billions of dollars of advantage that the high-frequency traders take out of the market, those are dollars that are those executions, preferable executions, would have gone to the benefit of the public, if you will. So there is a problem. It doesn't seem like one penny at a time it's a problem, but you add it up, it's a huge problem. If you look at the three largest dark pools in the United States, which are Barclays, UBS, and Credit Suisse, they manage the three largest dark pools.
Okay.
According to Tab Group, last year in 2013, they generated $800 million in commissions. That does not include the high-frequency trading profits that they garner from going into their own dark pools and essentially front-running those orders. So $800 million in a year.
That's the same money they used to make in commissions when they were operating the specialist system on the floors of the exchange. It's just been transported elsewhere.
What
correct?
About it? We've always been done that much, Shah. It's just a different format now. You buy
but
that?
Part of the problem that is not being addressed is this: is the advent of high frequency trading in terms of what's going on behind the scenes undermines, I think, the credibility of the market in terms of the transparency. Number one, and number two, in terms of structure, because if these high frequency traders step away from their computers as they did in the flash crash of May 2010, we see what can happen. The market, the bids will simply evaporate, and the market can cascade down so rapidly it's beyond frightening.
I want to look at.
We're
that.
Going to see more of those.
Hold that thought. Here was Mary Jo White, chairwoman of the Securities and Exchange Commission. This was just last Friday, talking to the Economic Club of New York about new stock market concerns, about how technology is coming in, but in a way that's not optimizing for most investors.
I'm therefore concerned that in the fixed income markets, technology is being leveraged simply to make the old, decentralized method of trading more efficient for market intermediaries and its potential to achieve more widespread benefits for investors, including the broad availability of pre-trade pricing information, lower search costs, and greater price competition, especially for retail investors, is not being realized.
Retail investors, that's the little guy. Josh Brown, Shah Gilani, stand by. Let me go to our callers. Rich in Trumbull, Connecticut. Rich, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Thanks, Tom. I'm in line with your first guest. I believe the market is rigged. Fiber optic cable was rerouted and wound up miles, literally, okay, so that they could trade nanoseconds before others do. And it's just like front-running the market, and that is not fair to anybody.
If it's just pennies on trades, of course it adds up, but is this just like what you would have paid in the old days just to do a trade at all, Rich?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, where are the basic fundamentals of business when these trades are being made so quick? What about solvency and liquidity? You know, if you're back in your college days, you know, yeah. 101 accounting or business, you know? Who could make those decisions so quickly and trade so fast? And where were we in 2008? How much money did you have and how much money do you have now? It went down, you lost 50, 60% of your money, and now you're back and take away inflation. You know, where are you? Where'd you? They stole your money.
Gone. Josh, what do you say?
But Rich, I want to put something. I want to put something out there that I agree with you. Where are the business fundamentals of all of this? Most of it is probably not important or healthy at all. So I don't say, oh yeah, we should have more high frequency trading, or it's totally great. I agree with you. A lot of this is just absurd, and it's just fighting for nanoseconds, and there's very little economic benefit other than for the players themselves. So I'm with you there. But we have to put out the fact that spreads between bid and ask on stocks have tightened almost to the point of non-existence as a result of all this electronic trading. So there aren't zero benefits to it, is the first thing. The second thing is, people have always had a speed advantage. In the early 1800s, 200 years ago, the Rothschild family, they had a series of runners waiting to find out the outcome of the Battle of Waterloo, and they literally ran the news from the battlefield in continental Europe to the London Exchange, and Baron Rothschild was able to place his trades ahead of others.
I mean, okay, but it's hard to run. It's hard to run that distance. It's easy for fiber optics to send that information and do it systematically over a vast number of trades. Taylor in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Taylor, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I feel like this discussion kind of misses a larger point. That
okay, go big for us.
We've kind of gotten away on the stock market from investing in the value of a company, and we've moved almost completely to these transactions that are involved in trying to game the system.
Yeah. All gymnastics and not really focused on the value shot. Doesn't that matter to our economy over time? This is supposed to be where we understand supply and demand, where people soberly assess. And of course, there's always exceptions, but there's fundamental sober assessment of value here. Does that disappear in all this speed and dark pool shot?
I don't know that disappears. What does disappear is the fundamental belief that the markets are fair and orderly and that everybody gets a fair shake. And that is not the case. I think we're increasingly seeing, as light is being shed on every dark corner and every dark pool, that is not the case. The public is being disadvantaged. And now we're finding that institutional investors themselves are being disadvantaged. So there's going to be hell to pay. But I think what's being obscured here is that the systems that we rely on that predicate the economy in terms of our capital market structures are being undermined. That is a long-term problem.
Does everybody do it?
I think there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
I agree with Shah there. You know, we used to have this second and third tier of smaller broker-dealers, and they used to do a lot of IPOs, and they would bring small and mid-sized companies public, which would create jobs, which would lead to more depth and more width in the economy. And that whole tier has been wiped out by the fact that they can't make markets any more profitably because of all of this electronic trading. So I do think there's some truth to the fact that the more electronic the markets have become, the less choice there is and the less capital formation there is. But the good news is that started to change with the fact that the markets have gone much, much higher. We've added about $35 trillion in stock market wealth in the last 5 years during this period in which high-frequency trading has come about. So it's hard to say that's really wrecked the economy or had a terrible impact on it.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about Wall Street's dark pools and fairness, integrity in U.S. stock trading. A big suit this week by the New York State Attorney General charges favoritism, secrecy, lying. It goes to the integrity and fairness of the U.S. stock market. Here's Senator Carl Levin of Michigan said the conflicts of interest in the current market structure these days, this was a Senate Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations hearing, these days, he says, are affecting everybody, not even just investors.
There is significant evidence that these conflicts can damage retirement savings, pension holdings, and other investments on which Americans rely. And even Americans without a single share of stock or a mutual fund account have something at stake, because stock markets exist to foster investment, growth, and job creation. Conflicts of interest jeopardize that vital function.
Carl Levin there, recently on Capitol Hill. Joshua Brown is with us, author of Backstage, Wall Street Financial Advisor, joining us from New York. Shah Gilani is here, editor of Capital Wave Forecast. He writes about finances and the markets on moneymorning.com, former hedge fund operator himself on a pretty good scale. Lots of feedback online here. Let me show. I mean, some of it's just humorous. Here's Zelen says, we're talking dark pools. He says, I much prefer those pools with the underwater lights. Yeah, that blue light is very nice. Here's another. Chris says, stock market is a rigged casino that takes from the masses to pay obscene salaries to the pit boss. Pete says, it's a big club and we ain't in it. Daphne, the game is rigged against the small investor. On the other hand, Mark writes, are you kidding me? The market was built by and for insider trading. Wake up. James in Dallas, Texas. James, thanks for calling. You're on the air.
Hey, I just want to say there's always been a cost of doing business in this sort of thing. But the fact that I can go home, take my barely above minimum wage paycheck, pay all my bills, and have enough to invest, because the minimum to invest on these kind of online sites is like as little as $100, and I agree that I've never been able to do that before. I don't have to go to somebody and say, here's 10 grand of my money and I want to invest that much or something like that. And if they're offsetting the ease of doing business and they're reducing the barrier of entry by selling it to these people who are high frequency trading and all these notorious things, then I'm okay with that, because I still have the ability to enter the market, which I did not have before.
So at least you're in it, and it's cheap to be there. You're kind of channeling Josh Brown there. Shah, what do you say to James in Dallas?
I say it's all well and good, James, that you're in the market until the market crashes as a result of the systemic problems, caused by high-frequency trading and the intermediation that increasingly takes money out of the markets and makes them very uneven. That's the problem. It's not so much, again, it's easy to make the case that what's a penny here and there when you're buying any volume of stocks. It's not a whole lot if you're a long-term investor. Yep. The problem is, if the market crashes, everyone is at risk. The economy is at risk, and these are that's the fundamental problem that investors have with the market in terms of their trust. That's the fundamental problem we have in terms of the economy and looking at the market. Are the markets safe? If they're not, then the economy not be safe.
Explain your heightened concern here that we could risk more and worse crash because of high frequency trading, dark pools, that somehow we're more likely to be left with our pants down here. How? Why?
We talk a lot about volume. We talk about high-frequency traders being responsible for something like 50% of the volume that we can shed a light on, let's say. But if you take a look at really what's going on with that high-frequency trading volume, it's adding to what we perceive to be greater volume equals greater liquidity. The two are about as far apart in actuality as they can be.
Why? Liquidity, it would make sense if there's volume, then things are moving, it's liquid, so we're fine.
No, but that exactly is the problem, is the representation of volume equals liquidity is flat out wrong. And it's deceitful, because liquidity has nothing to do with volume. Volume is about the volume of shares that are traded. Liquidity is the ability to move in and out of the markets, particularly and more importantly, out of the markets at the time where there are stresses. If there are no bids, if there are no buyers standing by, then you don't have liquidity. Prices drop precipitously. This is what we saw in the May flash crash of 2010. The high-frequency traders turned off their computers. They did not add any volume, so the volume we thought was there, the quote-unquote liquidity that everyone assumed was there, evaporated, and the markets fell precipitously in seconds. Yeah. This can happen again. This is part of the system now, and that's what worries me more than anything else.
Josh, even with your sort of sanguine view of this, isn't that a little spooky? We did see them, as Shah says, turn off their computers and get out of the market, and boom, down it went.
Actually, I agree with Shah 100%. That is the biggest risk. So all the benefits that we're getting from electronic trading, the real biggest risk is that when we need that liquidity the most, these guys go home flat for the day, they disappear.
Why is that? Because there's no plumbing to work at that point?
Because they don't work for anyone. These are independent firms. Mm-hmm. They're not specialists on the floor of the exchange. They have no obligation to make a market. And their programs are written specifically, in a lot of cases, to walk away just when they're needed most, because that's when the risks are the highest for the type of thing that they're doing. And these firms don't take any risk. One of them actually, I think, went 4 years without having a single negative trading day.
Wow.
So these are almost – so look, I agree with Shah there, and that is what I like seeing the regulators address, and I hope they find the answer to it. But – and this is a very important but – it's also very true that the market can crash for reasons other than high-frequency traders. As a matter of fact, going back to 1896 when the Dow Jones Index was created, we've got 13 episodes in which stocks declined by more than 35%, what we would call a crash. So you're talking about basically one every decade or so that we've been around. Four of those episodes took place in the 1930s. There were no high-speed traders. So this is not the primary reason why a market crashes. It may exacerbate it, and that's where I'd like to see the regulators focus. So I totally agree there, and we should have better rules that don't allow them to shut themselves down if they want a risk-free arbitrage. That's probably not real capitalism.
There's a steady risk standing right there right now that gets very unsteady in a hurry. Alan in Cambridge, Massachusetts. Alan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. This goes to a point that Josh made earlier, that in the old days, the traders carry out trades, and they would take out all this money on commission, and that would be about $800 million or something of value.
Yeah.
Now the high-frequency traders were also getting this $800 million or something.
Yep.
By providing something. But my point is that in the old days, they were providing providing value by doing the trades. But now they're not, because they're just using these electronic trades. And typically, as you introduce technology to industries, things should get cheaper. So that money that we pay the traders should go down, but now they're just extracting that, trying to kind of maintain that status quo if they can make this much money.
Yeah, Alan, I love your point. And Josh, this is kind of Mary Jo White's point, that we're supposed to gain further advantages by these developments in technology and all the rest. If we get complacent about this and we say, oh, that's fine in the dark pools, pretty soon you're missing out on a whole chunk of efficiency that should be working back into the economy, Josh.
Here's the real problem, and the origin of this is when the New York Stock Exchange and the NASDAQ went to the SEC and to Congress, and they said, we have to be for-profit organizations. So prior to that, they were basically an institution that existed to serve the public good for capital formation and all the other things we talked about mm-hmm. before. They said they needed to become public because the European exchanges were all acting as for-profit companies. And in order to keep up with the technology, they needed the money. And the only way to do that was to become for-profit. Okay, fine. So we allow them to come for-profit. It was one of those moments in time when everyone was going public. Goldman Sachs went yep. public, all the yep. dot-com. So we let the New York Stock Exchange go from an institution that served the public good to a corporation that was seeking to grow its earnings. How did it do it? Well, there was so much competition for just executing stock trades, and it had become so commoditized that they had to go out and find something more esoteric. And what they found was high-frequency trading firms that were willing to pay them to co-locate servers directly on the exchange
right.
or to have fiber optic conduits that no one else had access to.
Yep.
The irony of that, of course, is that the New York Stock Exchange gets bought out by Europe anyway, by the German company and NASDAQ probably eventually anyway. But that's really the origin of all this, because if they were just a public institution, they would not be selling themselves out to the highest bidder for fast and exclusive access to trading or quotes.
I mean, look, it seems to me, Shah, that you've got a bigger issue here as well, and some of our listeners are pointing to this online, but there's a big confidence issue, kind of a public buy-in issue. If you get too much disillusionment, too much skepticism, here's AC writes to us, we can't even enforce traffic laws. I highly doubt there aren't shenanigans going on here on a greater scale. Kenny says, this is where Americans are supposed to save. Kenny says, it's rather simplistic to point out the system is rigged. The real point is, Kenny writes, that now more than ever, regular people are being forced into the rigged market. You may not mind now, but you will when you realize how much you lost at retirement. You can't dismiss it because investors are ripping off investors, because we're all investors. If you start, Mary Jo White's pointing to this as well, if you start losing general public confidence in some fundamental integrity, doesn't that start to rip apart the system itself, Shaw? Buy-in.
Exactly. Kenny's got it right. The problem, as I see it, the larger problem in this discussion is the credibility of the markets. It's one thing to say that markets have fallen and they always will fall. And when they fall for fundamental reasons, whether they're economic or there may be excesses in the market that cause a big sell-off, that doesn't destroy confidence in the capital markets. It's just a statement about excess, perhaps, or a statement about the economy, statement about future prospects for corporate earnings. But it doesn't say anything about the market. When we have crashes, like the flash crash, and we've had many subsequently, that point to the fact that this market doesn't seem to make any sense. And why did it go down the way it did? And my goodness, this is not a fair and orderly marketplace. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in it. Mm-hmm. We have undermined the capital markets, which the United States economy has been built on. That is a problem.
Stephen,
the flash crash lasted 15 minutes.
Thousands of points and trillions of dollars were lost.
No, trillions of dollars were not lost. That's
no,
they were
made back up. But don't
they were not lost? And if you didn't do anything, if you were out at lunch while it happened, it had zero impact on anyone's portfolio. A third of all the money going into the market from America right now is going into passive investment vehicles like the ones offered by iShares, Vanguard, State Street.
Yeah.
These people are not at risk of a 15-minute episode in the market between two traders.
Yeah, still, they watch, and over time they make judgments about where they can, should put their money. Steve in Exeter, New Hampshire. Steve, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. Josh Brown makes a point that we've always had abuse in the stock market of various types in the past with slower trading, and that's really what he's trying to use to justify current abuses in the stock market with high-frequency trading. And he's really conflating the benefits of electronic trading, high-speed trading, with the benefits of high-speed flash traders. And there's a big high-frequency traders.
Mm-hmm.
There's a big distinction. The benefits of high-frequency trading are something everybody agrees with, even Michael Lewis. I think it's important to point those out.
What's the distinction that you're pointing to? I'm not sure I get it, Steve. What's the distinction?
Well, high-frequency electronic trading is what reduces bid-ask spreads.
Yeah.
That's a lot different from the advantages that high-frequency traders get in order positioning, both in dark pools and just from co-location.
I see. You're singling out the advantages themselves and saying, hey, that's not okay. Why put up? Is there kind of moral corruption there, Josh?
I'm not conflating the two. That was the first point I made on the show.
Yeah.
Electronic trading in and of itself is a positive. High-frequency traders, however, take advantage of it in ways that are not fair. The Barclays example is a great example of that.
And the AG is saying they're being abetted in that by Barclays.
Correct. And I totally agree that if the AG is correct and Barclays is inviting its institutional customers who represent America in their pensions and mutual funds, if the AG is correct that Barclays is inviting in institutional investors and then through a back door inviting in predators and lying about it, it's disgusting. I'm not conflating the
that
two.
That is what
I'm
they're
not excusing
saying.
It and I'm not justifying it.
Yeah.
But it goes further than that. Not only are they saying that they're inviting in high-frequency traders, they're pointing to the fact that Barclays themselves operates a high-frequency trading desk, which is allowed into its own dark pool.
But they're saying they're letting the sharks loose on
customers.
Those pension funds. Joshua,
yes.
Boston, you're on the air, Joshua.
Hi, Tom. Thank you.
Yeah.
I just want to point out that what we're talking about today is really only one example of a number of advantages that insiders in the market are abusing to gain a penny here or two pennies there. Michael Lewis talks about a somewhat different advantage that's being taken, and barely a month goes by where we don't hear some other example of some tiny, obscure advantage that's being taken by people who are within the structure and are able to
put them all together. Do they matter, or is this marginal stuff that we should just fluff off as the world is not perfect, Joshua?
I think altogether they must matter to some degree, and I think it all certainly matters in terms of the confidence in the market that you're talking about for the non-insider.
Joshua, I appreciate your call. Shaw Gilani, do you expect a crackdown of some kind here? I mean, the New York AG is taking action right now. This pretty big class action suit against Barclays. You've got the SEC investigating. I don't know where they're going to end up. Can you regulate this effectively, or is the technology just, you know, torn on down the road and they're not going to catch up?
Technology is not the problem. It's the regulation of the technology that's the problem. This can be corrected. High-frequency traders can be brought to – actually, the playing field can be leveled for the public in terms of high-frequency traders' intermediation. They simply have to act as market makers. In other words, honor their bids and offers instead of going into the marketplace and firing in orders that they don't intend to execute to look to see how they – other traders' orders in order to execute against them. It's just completely unfair. So another, one way to do that is to stop them by from actually just going in there and what's called pinging the market and yep. actually have them execute at prices they say they want to transact at. That's one thing. So there are lots of other things that regulators can do. I think that the AG's action is going to be very telling. I think it's the first of many to come. And I think the SEC, under Mary Jo White's announcement on June 5th, is taking a hard look at dark pools and high-frequency traders. I think there's going to be a lot of new legislation coming down the path.
Joshua Brown, what's your bottom line here? I mean, we've still got a democracy. Should people be putting pressure on for more regulation? Are you saying don't worry, be happy, or let's tighten up?
No, I'm saying don't let this stop you from investing for your retirement. Don't think that markets have ever been more fair at other points in time. There are always bad actors. There are always nefarious deeds. And I agree with Shah. I think quote stuffing, I think manipulative practices and front running should be eradicated from the HFT business model. And if they can't make money without doing that stuff, then they can go away and someone else will come in and make those markets. But at the end of the day, this is pragmatism 101. The markets are never going to be completely fair. Get over it. Have a cup of coffee. Life goes on.
I say let's watch out for integrity at the same time here. Some baseline. Josh Brown, author of Backstage Wall Street, thanks for joining us from New York.
Thank you.
Shah Gilani, editor of the Capital Wave Forecast. Thanks, Shah. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.